Okay, well, welcome to our breakout session of Loving Kids with Additional Needs. So I am so glad you are here. I'm going to try to stick to my script, because if not, I will just start talking and going on, and we have to have an end time. So our goal for this time is just, not for you to take notes and learn, but also just to be encouraged as parents. And I'm talking more to all y'all, because these are our speakers on the front row, but just that you leave here encouraged, most of all. And so during this session, you'll have the opportunity to learn from several families who have faced various challenges while raising their children, but you're also going to hear just some sweet things, of valuable insights of how you can parent your child as well. So first of all, I would love to start with prayer. So we will do that. Let's pray. Father God, just thank you for this time. Thank you for just a conference, even just for making this possible for us to have, and just for busy parents to make time out of their schedules to come and want to hear from others of just how to love and shepherd their kids. I just pray that we can glorify you in all we do here. I pray that just these families just feel a sense of they are not alone, and that there is lots of help and encouragement around them, and just people to rely on, like the church and like friends and family. So I pray that they go home, implement things that they can learn from here, but most of all that we make this not about a talk, a speaker, or even church, but we make it about you. And we just know that you are all we need. So thank you for this time. Amen. Again, my name is Jennifer Hawkins. So glad you're here. I'm the director of our additional care ministry here at Watermark. And thank you for being here. So let's talk about how crazy life is. So when my family first joined Watermark 21 years ago, we had 3 children, ages 8, 5, and 1. And today we have 5 adultish to adult children, aging in range from 29 to 17. And then we also got a blonde hair, blue eyes son-in-law. So that's so fun. But people can always tell. They're like, oh, which one looks not like the other? I just want you to know, first of all, that our staff has been praying for y'all. We've prayed for this conference. We've prayed for your spouse, for your kids. But me specifically, I have just prayed that most of all that you out of this conference grow for a deeper love of Jesus. I also have prayed just for you to connect with your spouse. That's just going to be a sweet time. Last night we had a fun after party, and I was like, I hope this is just a fun date night for everybody. And then also just lastly, to be renewed with a sense of encouragement in your journey of loving your children. So that was my specific prayers for y'all. My husband often says, if you don't know God's love, grace, and mercy, how can you show God's love, grace, and mercy? And I really, truly believe that. I believe if you don't know it in your heart, it's really hard to show that to others. And so that's just your relationship with Christ, and trusting him with everything, trusting him with your kids, trusting him with your family. So you do. You need Jesus in your marriage. You need Jesus in your parenting, and you especially, I believe, need Jesus when you're parenting a child with additional or special needs. And you cannot do that on your own. And y'all, I think, all know that here. You need others to lean on, and that is where the church comes in. So we, the church, are here to help. So I'd love to start to tell you, just kind of, most of our friends are from Watermark. Anybody not from Watermark in here? Okay, so I'm just going to go over a quick thing then. Oh, you're not?
We're not from Watermark.
Okay, yes. Oh, hi. I met you last night. Okay, and so, yes, tell you about just a quick thing we have for some parents that maybe don't know, but our Kaleidoscope ministry. Kaleidoscope's goal is to provide encouragement, accommodations, and inclusive environments for children and students with disabilities and additional needs on a Sunday and also during the midweek. Everyone's given the opportunity to worship, play, learn about Jesus, and grow together with their peers in an appropriate setting. And this also is a one-on-one buddy system that we do have. Our next one is recess. So recess is, I like to say it's a big birthday party. And so recess is a four-hour respite here at Watermark. It gives a parent an opportunity to get rest and reconnect with a significant other or just get some me time. We have some families drop off and they go home and they take a four-hour nap, which we love. And so if that is what you need, we totally support you in that. It's for the child experiencing disabilities, and they are also paired with a one-on-one adult as well. And they, again, we just want to make this just a fun night. We have so many kids that come, and they are looking so for. We have some parents shaking heads of like, it has to shut off like at 30 kids right now, and y'all can pray for leaders for that because we have a lot of time, a wait list. And so we would love to say, hey, every kid that can sign up, we want you to come. But so pray for leaders in that. But yeah, it's a bunch of games, movies, painting nails, snacks, just running around and having fun at like a big birthday party. And then also it's for the siblings. So those that are a sibling that also have a sibling of additional needs, they get to come as well, and they get to experience just seeing other kids that also have siblings that have special or additional needs. So that is our two programs here at Watermark that we love to supply and support families with. And so if you're interested in these, happy to answer those questions as well. So now I would love for you to be inspired by a few friends who have trusted Jesus through their parenting journey, who also have kids with additional needs. They have faced challenges and trials and seasons when they have really had to learn on Jesus, lean on Jesus, but they have also experienced sweet moments of praise, gratitude, and just give praise to where the Lord has really worked in their lives. And so I would love for you to, we're going to start with Andy and Hannah Barty, and they will share their short story about their journey with their sweet Cora. And who is what now, 3 and a half?
Yes.
Good. Crazy. Okay. Yes. So if you want to come up, talk.
That's us.
Hi. Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah. In case you can't tell, that's us, minus the three others. But I'm Andy. This is my wife, Hannah. And obviously, these are our kids from oldest to youngest. My stepson, Hannah's son, Samuel, at the end.
21.
Sophia, this is at her graduation, so she's now in college at 18. Little Cora Bear right there for us, and then you recognize the other two. So,
15-year difference between them.
Yeah, pretty wild. So just a quick background as far as we go. Hannah and I knew each other as kids. We kind of like went our separate ways. We grew up in Oklahoma, both. Went to church camp together and kind of knew each other for a long time. And our paths went different ways. And we came back to each other about 12 or 13 years ago. So for us, it was interesting because I was a single person. I lived in Houston. I was, I had a dog and that was it. Hannah had her two kids at that time were 7 and 3, get ready to be 8 and 5. And so there was, some unique challenges, obviously, with all that in general. And then, we kind of went back and forth with wanting children, not wanting children. She wanted them, I didn't want them. We could just never seem to sync up. But then we kind of started, later in our marriage saying, hey, it's probably time we make some decisions here. There is a time clock.
I wasn't getting any younger.
Yeah. So we said, okay, here's the time frame. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, then it just, it wasn't meant to be. It was what it was. So about 6 months before that gate closed, Hannah pulled me aside and said, hey, I'm pregnant. So
the first test was negative.
Negative. but she still was napping a lot, and all the signs pointed towards something was up. So, yeah, so she took a second test and realized that she was pregnant. So it was, you know, obviously exciting, you know, and the whole time, obviously, we're doing the same things that any parent would do, which is, you know, going to doctor visits. And
I was considered, what is it, not the geriatric, but
high risk.
Yeah, so we had the sonograms all the time, you know. And there did careful watch.
Yeah, and there did come a time when the doctor said, hey, you know, do you want to do testing for, mm-hmm. you know, genetic disorders, those sorts of things? And, I spoke up and said, absolutely not, and Hannah agreed. You know, I said, regardless of what happens, you know, this is, we're going to love this child just like any other child, and we're going to do it, you know, with all of our heart. So,
and we also didn't think, you know, you don't think, it's going to be unhealthy. Everything's going to be
Yeah. Well, and of course, everything they're going through was signs were great. So, So for us, it was just exciting. We were looking forward to it, and the day came, and Hannah went into labor, and
she came out real fast.
Yeah. Third or fourth push.
Yeah, they were like, whoa, stop pushing. Wait just a second.
Yeah.
It's on his butt.
Yeah. And that was kind of like when everything changed in our world. So when Cora was born, there was obviously some, looking back, some obvious things that we noticed, that some responses and things like that we weren't aware of at the time. And then just some mentions of a few things. And for us, we kind of went into like unsure mode, or, you know, just not really understanding what was going on. And, you know, as the time progressed, obviously we went back to the room. They brought Cora back. Then the doctor would come in and sort of talk to us. And yeah, there was some mention of a couple things, and Hannah can kind of talk about, like, you know, the specifics of the doctor.
Well, it was that next morning, and when the pediatrician visits, right? And it wasn't my pediatrician for my older kids. It was some 21, 2-year-old, you know. And I didn't know who she was. And so she's talking, and she just tries to meet 21. And I just was like, what are you talking about? Can you back up for just a second? She just, like, moved right on after that. And she was like, well, that's also known as Down syndrome. And I didn't hear anything else after that. Yeah. I heard nothing else. I just went into this, like, blank face shock. And then I stopped and I said, wait a second. So you're telling me right now that you think my daughter has Down syndrome? And then I think I just was silent after that.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously there was some additional testing and things like that they had to go through. And for us, it was, because we didn't necessarily know what to expect. I mean, there were some denials from, you know, I think a lot of it was all predicated on fear of the unknown in the future. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, all of us in the room having children with disabilities, I mean, I think it's always the in the forefront of your mind is what does your future look like? And so it was for us, you know, sort of this fork in the road of like, okay, are these things going to happen? Are these mm-hmm. things going to be, you know, not in the cards anymore? And so
he left the room and I immediately got on my phone. And
speaking of FaceTime or screen time,
right?
WebMD over here.
Because, and the reason was because, honestly, like, I did not know. I wasn't raised around any individual with Down syndrome or, you know, autism or any, you know, special or additional need. And I didn't know. And so, yeah. And he came back in the room and he knew. He was like, you didn't get on your phone, did you?
Yeah.
He literally said that. I was like, yeah.
But for me, it was like there was obviously some fears and some things like that. But there was also some peace too, knowing that, like, through my life, like I had done some, my degree was in education. I actually looked into special education. I had an aunt that was in special education, so I was familiar with it in that regard.
He
always
volunteered.
Kind of being around her. I would volunteer with Special Olympics, even as frequent as like a year or two before, you know, before she was born. And so, you know, for me, it was something where I had been around Down syndrome children. I knew that there were something unique and special. And for me, it was like, okay, I don't know what that looks like, but I kind of have a version of what I think maybe that's going to look like. And so,
yeah, and in the hospital, I was a mess. I mean, I was just like all over the place, but he was just very calming and very reassuring. And he just basically was saying, like, God has prepared me for this, Hannah. Like, we've got this. And I was just like, okay. And it really was calming and reassuring for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think at a certain point, I just kind of realized that, you know, God chose us for that. So it was like, mm-hmm. you know, for this mission that we have for this little girl. And it was, yeah, while there was fears and doubts, and obviously, you know, I just think some things that go through your mind of like, maybe that's not going to happen, those sorts of things. Obviously, we're always there and still are there. But, you know, for me, it's more of, I just think of it as like a missional thing. Like, God put us here for a reason and put her in our life for a reason. She's going to be, you know, something pretty great. So I always say that, you know, Hannah hears me say this all the time, but, you know, comfort and growth can never coexist. And so it's like, you know, for us, growing, learning, she's gonna teach us.
Not is going to teach us, like, she currently teaches us. I mean, she is, you know, fast forward now 3.5. A lot has transpired in those 3.5 years. We were with her an entire year of a shutdown, daily.
Which was a blessing because, you know,
mom and dad.
I travel for a living. And so for me, it was like, you know, I immediately, the month after she was born, I was supposed to be on the road and I was supposed to be kind of back at it. And so when the pandemic happened, it was really kind of a blessing in disguise. And, you know, for those of there's two people that look at the pandemic in two different ways. And it's like, it's either, you know, it's, that is precious time that no generation's ever had, right? Or you know, that is priceless time that is never going to be had. Well, hopefully never had again, but for sure up to this point in our history has never been had. So we looked at it as something where we were able to interact with her every day and spend time with her every day. Was great. I mean, sucks now because it's like, you know, like I have to leave her, go on the road. She doesn't understand.
She is not
that.
Happy.
So, but
she's a daddy's girl. For
right.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's like, you know, we were encouraged by a lot of different programming and things that were out there, you know, with the idea of like, it's a good thing and we should be excited about it. Congratulations, you know, for this new journey that we have. And so, you know, the way I always looked at it too is kids in general have a lot of challenges, period. Like, you know, whether they have a disability or not. And so for me, I always looked at it as like, this is just a different type of challenge. Sam and Sophia had plenty of challenges too. So, you know, I just didn't ever think of it as like something where it was daunting or it was terrible. I always looked at it as something that was like fantastic. I couldn't wait for her to share things with us, but more importantly, just to teach the world about, you know, somebody said to us in the very beginning stages that, you know, children with disabilities and, you know, Down syndrome specifically is like the closest version of what Jesus was on earth, where he just didn't think about things like we think about it. Like, he didn't care about some of the things that we care about. He just loved unconditionally. And so, you know, hearing somebody mention that to me, I was kind of like, oh man, she's destined for something great. And so, you know, for us, you know, while understanding there's a lot of challenges in the world, and obviously there's different challenges when it comes to different disabilities, we just know that Cora is really been a blessing in our life every single day. I mean, there's challenges, but there's obviously the other things far exceed that. So we're excited about that. At least
Because I didn't really know. I mean, I now that I have Cora and we have Cora in our life, I look back at my childhood and upbringing, and I don't know why I never thought about an individual with Down syndrome, but I didn't know. So I reached out, and I'm glad I did. I mean, I reached out here. I reached out to, you know, the Down Syndrome Guild. I reached out to try to find other moms. I mean, I did my due diligence to try to learn as much as I could. Now, I might have learned a little too much to scare me. I didn't like that part, but he was always there to kind of bring me back down to reality, so that was good. But, I mean, even this, you know, here at Watermark.
Yeah.
I know, I was getting ready to say, where are we?
Yeah.
Okay, here at Watermark, you know, we have a mom's group, and, you know, that community is, like, really beneficial because it's just full of resources.
For sure.
Yeah.
So that's us. We'll wrap Thank up. You very much. Awesome.
I know, all of us could stand out here and talk forever.
Thank you,
especially sweet Cora. Yes. Okay, so next we have Abby Smith, who is just going to talk about advocating for your child in the public school system. And I'm going to sit here and give y'all a minute.
Thank you.
That could be a breakout on its own.
Yeah.
I know. I was like, I could do a whole conference. Let's do this. This is my family. So I'm Abby. My husband is Rick Smith. I have Noah, Jackson, and Cohen. I'm a local pediatrician as well, and then my husband used to be on staff here at Watermark. We now have a nonprofit called Hope Story that he runs, and so all three of my kids have IEPs. The first one, Noah, is he has Down syndrome, and so that one's kind of obvious. But my middle has dyslexia and dysgraphia, and also some other reading learning disabilities, as well as ADHD. And then my youngest has a speech impairment, and so every last one of them has an IEP, and so I'm well versed in all of those things. And so I think one of the most important things is to realize God designed your child's brain and their bodies just as He intended. So any learning difference that is there was intended to be there, and the struggles or the things that they have to deal with is that's God intended that. And so when I'm ever diagnosing a kiddo, I'm like, this is how God knitted your brain together. And you learn in a different way, or you need this to support it. So like with dyslexia, like we know how to teach those children how to read. We have all these resources. So just realizing that God intended for that to be there. It's not an error. And that does not determine their worth. Their struggles, if they are not learning on the same level as their peers, that does not mean that they are less than. And so like they are valued just as who they are. They don't have to prove themselves ever. And so just knowing that. So there is a whole nother session after this that's going to explain like the 504 IEP and stuff like that. But just so you know, from 0 to 3, the state provides early childhood intervention. And then from 3 to 21, the school district takes over and provides services for your kiddos. And that is all free once they are 3. So if you have any concern about your kiddo, that you are like worried about speech, you're worried about learning, anything, you just ask the school district to do a full assessment of your kiddo, and that is a free service. They will fully assess your child and determine if there's anything there that needs to be assessed. And that can even be just attention. It's not a medical diagnosis of ADHD, but if attention is a concern that you think is impacting them, they can do that assessment and see, yes, their attention is impacting their learning. So once you do that, then you go through an R to review that information. That stands for admission, review, and dismissal. And that's when they decide if you get services or not. And if you get services, then you create your IEP, which is your individualized education plan. And so that is exactly what it says. It's an individualized education plan for your kiddo. So one of the things I think is really helpful is to have a mission statement for your kiddo of what you want them to get out of school. So our first child, Noah, his mission statement is, I want him to be valued and included in the neighborhood with which he lives. Which means that I did not want him sent off to a different school. I wanted him in where he and his brothers were intended to go. So that is kind of our mission for him. My next one, Jackson, I want him to read and comprehend what he is reading and be able to translate that and communicate that, his ideas kind of down on paper, just with what his learnings are. And then for my last one, I want him to be able to speak in a way that he can be fully understood. And he's almost there, so the school has worked. so he still has a little bit of things, but just like having that mission, and that mission has guided how we've got into our IEPs. And so for Noah, we were fine in preschool, but going into kindergarten, they wanted to send him to a different school that was specific. We are in RSD, they tend to centralize their campuses for different educational purposes. And so they will have their autism campus and their intellectual disability campus and stuff like that. And that was not our goal for Noah. And so they wanted to send him to a different school where they had all these services available, which would have been a great school. And so if my mission statement had been different, if it was more like, oh, I wanted him to really focus on reading and learning and stuff like that, I wouldn't have picked the inclusive environment. I'll just like, you have to kind of make sacrifices, unfortunately, sometimes. But ours was really just for him to have friends in our neighborhood. And so we then had to start fighting the school district on keeping him in our neighborhood school within the first few months of him starting. So the next thing is to know the law. You don't need to know a lot of law, but there's some few key things that can help you advocate for your kiddo and love them well. So just IDEA, I-D-E-A, is the law that's there. And it is very lengthy and long and talks about all the services and whatnot. But the big one for us was the least restrictive environment. And so the law states that your child, again, does not have to prove themselves worthy to be in a classroom. They don't have to be on grade level. They don't have to be learning those things at the same time. They can be in there with services and modifications to help them be in the classroom. And so that is very clearly stated in the law. And so that was probably our biggest thing that helped us get there.
What was that, your child?
Don't even know, but
okay,
here,
I'll get it from you.
I have a hand out. I'm sorry, I should hand it out. But the whole, the least restrictive, which is the LRE, is I have it here. The whole law is there. It just says they can be in the classroom with supports and modifications, and then you start bringing them out. And so the next thing is to have pull-out sessions. The next, so that's called resource if you're getting pulled out and doing that. And then you can have a fully pull-out session, which is a self-contained classroom. So that means that you, your child is not included with peers, but is in a separate classroom with all children with disabilities and learning there. What my path is and what your path is might be different. There is nothing wrong if a self-contained classroom is what's best for your kiddo. Like, if that is where they're going to thrive and learn, like, do that, because that's what's best for your kid. And I don't, a lot of times you hear push for inclusion, 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 but that might not be what's best for your kid. So don't let that feed into you and think you're a failure because your kid's in a self-contained classroom. Like, that is, that's where they thrive and learn and they're going to have friends. Like, let them be there. And I think that's really hard. I think a lot of people get on there, inclusion is the best, and you will feel bad if your kid's not. And that is not the case at all. You have to, that's why that mission statement, I think, is really helpful of, like, making those decisions for that. And know your data. That helps you keep your kid and get the services that they want. So when we were going into junior high, they, again, wanted to ship us to another campus that was not our home campus. But the data didn't support that. Noah was thriving in the environment that he is, and he's 50-50 inclusion and whatnot. But the data proved that he was successful, so they couldn't change his placement. So he had to continue on into junior high with his peers. So knowing your data, knowing what your kid's doing, you'll get these IEP report cards, just like a regular report card, and they'll tell you how your kid is doing. So just knowing that. And don't be afraid to bring a friend. There's advocates, there's lawyers. if you need them, don't be afraid. There's gonna be conflict, and I would say you and your spouse or whoever's going with you, you need to be on the same page before going in with those school district. Not being on the same page, and Rick and I have gone in not on the same page before, and it's just not good. So being on the same page beforehand, my husband wanted to make sure y'all knew that there was the conflict field guide through Watermark. I was like, yes, that's a good one. But just knowing, like, having that, and you're going to walk into a room. We have 12 people in Noah's ARD. Whoa. So it is a huge ARD. With all the services that he gets. Jackson has 3. So it's like the more needs your kid has, the more people will be there. So having a buddy is kind of nice, to be like an advocate who knows it. If you need it, bring him. And then also just again to put in, like, know your child's worth. Like, God designed them. He loves them. They don't have to prove them. They are just as important to be there. Those kids who get to interact with your child are going to be better kids. I wish you could all meet the 6th, like, I guess they're 7th graders now that are Noah's friends. They're different. They're compassionate, they're kind, they bring him in. His value there is just as important for his benefit as those other kids. So your child has purpose and worth no matter what. So anyway, there you go.
Thanks, Abby.
I'll pass these around.
Yes. Okay, and now we have Elisa Poe, and she's going to share about her story of her unique family where she and her husband are both deaf, and her oldest is deaf, and her 2 youngest are hearing. Is that correct? Oh, I got it. Okay, awesome. Thanks.
So I don't need a microphone. I'm just going to sign. Making sure my interpreters can see me. So that's my family. No, I'm just kidding. This is my family. So this is my husband, Matt. And then Elisha is deaf. He's my oldest. And then Ruby is my daughter. And Gabriel is my son. And then I don't know who that lady is on the end. So our family is very unique because I come from a multi-generational deaf family, as does my husband. And when we got married, we thought all of our kids would be deaf because that's what we're used to. So when my oldest was born, he's deaf, so we knew exactly what to do. We've had that experience growing up in a deaf family, knowing how to interact with people in a hearing world. We knew exactly what to do. And so with him being deaf, we weren't afraid. We felt very confident. But the ironic and funny thing is, when the other two were born with the ability to hear, we didn't know what to do, which is ironic. And so my husband works for a Bible translation organization. And so that's another unique thing, because many deaf people around the world don't know Jesus. And so for our oldest son, Elisha, when he was born to deaf parents, that's already unique. But then as believers and Christians, it makes him even more so a minority. But we think God has given us a privilege to disciple him in a very unique way, because there's so many people around the world in other countries
with deaf kids who face language deprivation, which means there's no connection to the family, there's no language, there's no education, and there's a feeling of invalidation because they're deaf. And so having a deaf kid that God gave us, we think that this is such a unique opportunity for us, especially to be disciples in a unique way. And God has a purpose for him and a reason for him to be in our family. Now with my hearing kiddos, it's awesome to see how they interact with each other, because they can help their older sibling, Elisha, who's deaf, because the two younger, I notice they look up to him on how to communicate. And I see sometimes in other families, if the oldest child is hearing and doesn't know sign language and the younger child is deaf, sometimes there's the learning of sign language doesn't exactly happen. That younger deaf child will struggle to learn sign language. But for our family, having the oldest signing with great competency, the younger siblings, though they're hearing, they want to copy their older brother. And so there's good communication access in the whole family. And so our house is also bilingual, as you know. Of course, the two younger speak English and they also sign. So we read family books together, and so we sign it, and they'll read it. Sometimes they'll speak, but most of the time, as a family, we use our common language, which is sign language. We all have access to that, and that's what we use as a community, especially in our community of people who sign, whether they're hearing people who have learned sign language or deaf people who sign. We have a good community around us, and it's good to have that environment where we feel like we constantly have a connection with others, we constantly have the ability to use our language, and it makes a good space for our son not to be left out, and to see others in our community who are learning to work to learn sign language. And I remember one coworker, she told me, you know, he told me, I'm just an old man, how can I learn sign? But I'm gonna learn sign because you're a kid. And it melted my heart to know that other people are being intentional to learn sign language for my 7-year-old. And the impact that he's having on the adults around us. Someone who cares enough about him and wants to connect with him through language and is willing to learn sign language. So it's awesome to see that. And so part of the work that we do with my husband's job is to raise awareness about translation of the Bible in sign language all over the world in different countries. And we always wonder if the Lord, you know, what the Lord's plan for our son is, which we're not going to determine for him. I know that's the Lord's plan, but we do want to provide proper education for him. And then for other kids for education, we've tried to put them in schools, very specific schools. We've tried to be strategic with that, but we have had some problems with people not wanting to provide interpreters. Sorry, for my oldest son, who is deaf. And so they haven't provided interpreters, so we have decided to homeschool him so that I can teach him at home through sign language, teach him the Bible. He is such a bright, bright kid. And he learns in a different way because he's deaf, but he's a sharp kid, and he loves science. He loves snakes, which I'm not a big fan of. And he's a very curious boy. He's very curious about the world, and he's very unique. So I want to pull that out of him and not just focus on the fact that he can't hear, because I don't care. We have that in common, and I understand that as a deaf person, that God made you in his image. And so do what you want to do, grow and be your own person. So that's my family.
And thank you so much. That was so fun to hear. Our last one is Rebecca, whose son is in Kaleidoscope. He's still in it, but just a different situation now, which she'll talk about. And then also Cecil, who was Bryant's buddy. So I will start with yours. If y'all want to switch it yourselves.
Okay.
Y'all can switch.
I have the other slide on there as well.
So this is Bryant. He's 10. And y'all, we have a whole crew. This is from this summer. This is my oldest. He's 23. And my future daughter-in-law. And then our daughter, Gabby, who's 15, Brian, who's 10, Ricky, who's going to be 14 tomorrow, mm-hmm. and my husband and I, who have been together for 17 years. So I would just say that to describe Bryant, he has ADHD, and the tricky part of his equation is that he has ODD. So if you don't know what that is, it's oppositional defiance disorder. And that's where he has anger inside of him that just makes him go from 0 to 60. Like none of us could relate to that, right? But he does it in a way that it really is so accelerated. I would say those are his earthly labels, though. He knows Christ as his Savior. So his heavenly label is redeemed. That's how God looks at him. And that's something that is good for me to be reminded of, is that he has labels that the earth has deemed that he's in certain categories. The Lord just really looks on him in the eyes of, like, being saved by Christ. And I'm just so thankful of that. But to give y'all just a snapshot, I have a form that I came across this week. I was going through the file cabinet, and of course, Lord in his provision and good timing, I came across a general observation that a teacher sent home in 2018. And so I just want to read some of the things that I highlighted that the teacher said was happening within the classroom. Bryant was getting frustrated very easily. Frustration often leads to tearing up work, throwing things, dumping things out, acting out against others. It's not making much progress in school. Makes loud noises and screams randomly throughout the day. Very impulsive, hard to predict what will set him off. Will sometimes push other kids. Won't take cool down breaks. Doesn't always realize that his actions hurt others or that there is something wrong. Sometimes I will call him up to the table and ask him why he pushed someone, and I'll ask him why he think that he did that, and he says, I don't know. And he will also say things like, that didn't even hurt, or that wouldn't hurt me. That's where we were in 2018 with him. Going into the public school setting really exasperated some of the things that we didn't even see that were happening at the house. Our home is his safe spot where he can just be who he was. But going into the public school setting really brought out some of the things that we had not even experienced within our own home environment. So I say all this because in 2018, I felt like that my circumstances were dictating my response to God, my response to my son. It really felt like I was living without hope and living in a way where I was expecting the next shoe to drop, right? Just living moment by moment. When is the next phone call gonna happen? When is the school gonna call me and tell me what he's done next? Is he gonna run out of the classroom today? Is he gonna hurt someone? There were things that I needed to do to look beyond the circumstances. So I wanted to encourage y'all today with a couple of practical things that my husband and I have been able to implement into our lives that have really been beneficial to look beyond the circumstances, to look beyond the here and now. The first one being a gratitude journal. For me, there were days where the entry was, thank you, Lord, for just keeping me breathing in and out. Real simple ways to be grateful. There were other days where it would be a laundry list of things unexpectedly would come our way, where Bryant would say, yes, ma'am, or please and thank you. And it was by keeping that journal, it helped me to hang my hat on something. That even though that we were praying actively, Lord, help reveal how you've designed Bryant. You made him inside my womb. You created his inward part, Psalm 139, right? Help reveal who he is and how special and unique you've made him in his image. Help us to have eyes to see the way that you see him. So keeping a gratitude journal was really helpful and beneficial to my husband and I, just to see the way that God was revealing to us daily how Bryant was created, but also just some of the things that, like, we didn't even have eyes to say, thank you, Lord, for this blessing beyond the cross, right? We are so blessed in this room. If you know Christ as your Savior, you're so blessed in this room to have, you know, the salvation that comes by knowing Jesus was on the cross, that he, you know, resurrected. He's coming back again for us. But there's so many blessings beyond the cross, and sometimes, like, we are just forgetful people. And so keeping a journal was super helpful for me. Praying also. And not necessarily like, Lord, change this situation, but Lord, help me to submit to your will. And then also laying down and confessing to him things that I was personally struggling with. Sometimes being so embarrassed out in public because of my tendency to be a people pleaser and to be embarrassed by my child's actions. And Lord, just like saying and leaning into my character through Bryant and saying, you know, I've called you not to win the hearts of men, but I've called you to be more concerned with our relationship. And then focusing on the Word of God. It was pivotal for me to memorize different verses that could help see me through the day. Ruth Graham said that she's the former, well, she's deceased, but Billy Graham's wife is Ruth Graham. And she would say that during her child-rearing years, she would just keep her Bible open on the kitchen counter so she could just grab a verse, you know, because when you're in the midst of child-rearing and raising up kiddos, it gets busy and it gets busy fast, right? The calendars fill up, but how are you meeting with God daily? So she would keep her Bible out, and I always thought about that. So I thought, sometimes it's not even feasible for me to, like, keep my Bible out. Like, I need the Word of God, like, in here to be reminded. Micah 6:8 was a good one for me. What does the Lord require of you? Act justly, love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. He has taught me so much about showing mercy to my son in the way that I have received mercy from my Heavenly Father. And then lastly, I would just say, find your village, right? Cecil is part of our village. There are people in this room that if you don't have a village, turn to somebody, meet for coffee this week, right? Find your village. It's been through a lot of prayer and a lot of discernment of who is part of our village, but the PASS program and the Richardson ISD, that is a program that Bryant is a part of, and those teachers are well equipped by the Lord to be able to facilitate how he needs to learn and what's best to get him an education that would benefit him. It's been a game changer for us. Cecil being a buddy here through the Kaleidoscope program, neighbors who are resource teachers, reaching out to neighbors around us, and then just finding out how God had equipped them to be really just a benefit to our child. We have neighbors next door that become like grandparents to him, and he's a former resource teacher. So, I mean, your village could literally be just right around you, but I would just encourage you to look around, start having conversations with people. And you know, Bryant's not perfect, but there's so many praises. Like, he loves fiercely. He has a heart for the homeless. We talk to every homeless person that we pull up next to, and we give out food packets to them. He loves the elderly. He has a heart for all sorts of different types of animals. You know, he makes amends, y'all. He makes amends, sometimes better than adults do, let's face it. He has been in quite a number of conflicts, but the Lord has showed him what it's like to humble himself before others, ask for forgiveness, and to make plans to be friends in the future. So I just want to encourage y'all with that, just keep seeking the Lord. And he really can. He can transform you and then help you with whoever you're helping, right? So thank y'all so much. But I want y'all to have time with Cecil because he's his buddy. So.
Hi, my name is Cecil, as you guys just heard. So funny enough, when I signed up for a Kaleidoscope, for some reason in my heart, I knew I was going to be paired with a Down syndrome person. That's what I expected. And fortunately, I did get to serve one Sunday with Abby's son, Noah, to be a part of that. And it's just weird looking around the room. Gabe's mom is here. I served with him in preschool, and I just so amazing how God has worked in my life and put kids in my life, because I've never been a parent. I've never had kids, but even before I became a believer, he's always put kids in my life with my nieces and nephews and friends' kids. So it's just been crazy to me as I look back on my life, how God has given me a heart for kids and how they've played a big part in my life. And I actually came to Christ late in life. I turned 61 back in September, and I was in my early 50s before I knew what a believer, being a true believer, really was, and also understanding what the gospel really is. And God brought me to this church that I've been a member of for the last 11 years. So one Sunday I was in, I think it was around May or June of 2019, I was sitting in a sermon and they were talking about the needs of kids ministry here at Watermark. And they mentioned Kaleidoscope. And to be just transparent, even though I've always had a heart for kids and loved kids, when I came to church, God has helped me find freedom from same-sex struggle. And I brought that shame with me and felt that if parents knew of my struggle, they wouldn't want me around their kids. So for years, a lot of people kept telling me, you need to serve in the kids ministry. And Satan was telling me, no, parents are not going to like you if you do that. Obviously, that was a lie, because he's helped me find freedom from that. So as I'm sitting there, and they're talking about Kaleidoscope, had no idea what Kaleidoscope was. It's just like something just like pricked in my heart, like, this is a ministry you should look into. And I prayed about it that summer, and in August of 2019, I did my yearly sabbatical where I went away for a couple, for the weekend, rented a cabin, and I was praying that weekend about a lot of different things and praying for a lot of different people, and Kaleidoscope was one of them, whether I should serve or not. And as I'm going through and reading Bible scriptures, this is the one that kept popping up for me, Exodus 4:11. Then the Lord said to him, who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? And even though Bryant doesn't have these specific disabilities, this to me kept saying that there are kids out there with additional needs. And God kept saying, I've given you a heart to love kids, and there's someone out there for you. And obviously I didn't know who that was. And also kept thinking too, in reading this verse, is that God was telling me that we are all created in his image, regardless of disabilities, whatever we're facing. We are all created in his image. And I love what Andy and Hannah said about him creating their daughter Cora for special reasons. And I've been around Down syndrome kids before, and you're exactly right. They are the epitome to me of what Jesus, how he loved. That's why I was sure I would be paired with a Down syndrome kid. But that was, God had a different story, and he had a different story for a reason. So when I first met Bryant, he was 5 years old. I don't see it here, but anyway, I've got a ton of pictures that I took with him. But anyway, he was 5 years old, and a lot of things that Rebecca talked about him, being angry and blowing up, and I wasn't sure how to react to that. And for probably the first 6 months or longer, we would sit in a corner in the classroom, and all he wanted to do was just talk to me or just not pay attention. And a couple of times when we interacted with the kids, he did get angry for whatever reason and would shove and push a kid. And I would just grab him and just hold him and just hold him until he would calm down. And at that point, I started to realize that after that happened a few times, he started to build trust with me and started to realize that I actually did care about him and I wanted him to participate and survive in that class. So in the beginning, also one thing that kind of frustrated me about the teacher, and I talked to the teacher about this, is that Brian got comfortable enough to raise his hand when a question was asked, and they would never call on him. And after they moved on to the next question, I would ask Brian, I would say, what were you going to say? And he would always have the right answer. He would always have the right answer. So one day after class, I went up to the teacher and I said, hey, if you don't mind, the part of Kaleidoscope, the reason why we're doing this is to make sure kids are not singled out, that they're a part of the class, that if you see Brian raise his hand, call on him, please. And they started doing that. And after that, he started getting a little bit more comfortable in the class, started interacting with the kids. And there were times he would still have these outbursts. But the great thing for me that God helped me with, I could actually see in his face when he was getting to that point. And if I saw that, I would remove him from the situation, or I would get closer to him and just start talking to him and giving him a hug. So it is totally, totally true what they say, that kids teach you more, a lot about yourself as well. And even though I had different expectations about who I was going to serve with, God put Bryant in my life for a reason. And it's funny because as I've watched him grow, he's 5 years old and he's 10 now. And he's taller than me. He's 10 now. As I've watched him grow, I've seen his personality just shine. I've seen him. It's funny because our personalities are very similar. We are outgoing, very sociable, have kind of the same sense of humor. We were cracking jokes with each other in class sometimes. Sometimes I have to get on myself about we're supposed to pay attention, not cracking jokes. But it was just, as he got older, I just realized how much that kid was like me, personality-wise, and bright and very sharp. I was just amazed. And I talked to his mom about this, Rebecca, a few times. He would ask me some very insightful, are you telling me to stop? Because I, and you will have to tell me to stop. I was telling her, I was like, he is asking some very insightful questions about the Bible that I've had to either think about or do some research on at 6 and 7 years old. And I was like, oh my goodness, kid, why does your mind think like that? I'm going to have to think about that. And I know Rebecca's had some of the same experiences. But it was just a joy for me to be able to be a part of this family. And I truly was a part of this family. They invited me over to their house when I initially started serving with Bryant. And we took a long walk and went to this park area. And that was the day that I think Bryant and I realized that we had a connection and that he could trust me, because after that, I could tell his reaction to me and how he approached me was totally different. So I was glad for that opportunity to be able to hang out with him outside of church. And it was to a point that if I wasn't there serving, he didn't want to go into class. he didn't want to go into class, so that just made me feel really special. And I'm at a point now where God is leading me in some different directions. And I felt that he's in a good spot. I mean, he has matured a lot. And I've seen the examples of him asking kids for forgiveness. Guys, it is just really special to see a kid do that without even me asking. But, and I'm sure you've encountered the same situation. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, so-and-so. Please forgive me. And just looking them directly in the eye. To Rebecca's point, sometimes I have to kind of like, with my pride, give in to asking someone to forgive me for something. And I'm glad to see that at a young age. I've got tons of pictures. These are just a few of us. And I got a chance to go to a Christmas service with him, some Easter services, served in recess. Look at this, guys. He wanted to dress up as Colonel Sanders. That is the funniest thing to me. But you can just see the pictures and see his personality and what a fun kid he is. So.
He has a flair for the theater.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm sorry. Again, I could talk all day, but go ahead. Thank you for inviting me to this.
Yes, of course. Awesome. Well, thank y'all. Thank y'all for sharing your stories. I could just listen to those just because they're so encouraging, I think. If you just get even one thing out of that, that would be amazing. And then I just want to end with Just a verse, Romans 8:18. I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed within us. And so, yeah, I think when we read that verse, we can just think of Paul as kind of glossing over just the physical and emotional pain that comes with human existence. But really, he is elevating much, much more of just the enormous glory that is going to come someday. And so I just want y'all to remember, it is not about this conference. It's not about Watermark or even about how great our kids are, which is a fun thing to think about, but it is about how amazing our God is, and that is just something we're celebrating. So we will end there. We have literally 4 minutes for question and answer. No, no, again, it's okay. It's okay, it's okay. Oh, yeah, I wish we had 2 hours, but we only have an hour. But does anybody have a question, you know, just that, to ask one of these? Yes.
First, does anyone have any tissues in here? Yes. But I mean, part of the reason why I'm in here is, what our son is with Gen Ed, in those circumstances where I get to see him with the cognitive normal peers, it's hard. And I don't see the good, the honor, the worthy of praise. I see what is not. And so, the game plan, like, what is the pre-game game plan for me to prepare my heart so that I can encourage him and be his biggest cheerleader, support my wife, be the thermostat for our family, because I walk away from those situations really discouraged.
I think comparison is hard. Like, we have what we think we should look like. We have, like, this typical view, and realizing that our children don't have to be that. Like, they get to be them. And I think trying to get, you know, a fish to climb a tree, like, the fish isn't meant to climb the tree. The fish can be the fish and swim in the water. So I think it's a lot of, like, accepting how your child was designed and seeing their strengths and not expecting them to live up what we think is normal. And God, knowing God designed them to be just like that. And I think it's just that acceptance of, this is how my child is designed. They have their strengths. And most likely, I'm going to assume your child's completely happy and content in that scenario. And, like, Noah doesn't look at his peers and think that he's less than. He thinks he's the party. he gets high fives. They include him. They do those things. But just seeing, and also seeing the benefit of, like, how those kids will hopefully interact with your child and bring him in and, like, include them that way, just seeing that. And knowing that they have value and purpose because of that. Like, they don't have to earn anything. They don't have to do that. And just trying to accept where they are. I think it's hard as a parent. I went to medical school, residency, all these things. So I've been, like, checking boxes and trying to overachieve my whole life. And it was a huge difference to, like, watch my children struggle. And I'm like, school was easy for me. I'm like, this was a piece of cake. And, like, watching my children struggle and realize that doesn't determine their worth. I'm like, because you aren't smart doesn't mean anything. I watch them work hard. Like, we get told Jackson, our middle, does the same thing. He'll ask for forgiveness. He's kind. He's compassionate. That means more to me now than his, you know, grades. Like, he gets an 80. I'm putting it on the refrigerator. You know, like, so just, I think it's, but it's a lot of work in your own heart of, like, what you expect, letting go of that and letting your child be who they were designed to be.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to end on that. Because it was great, and because it's 11:15. But thank y'all all for being here. Like Abby talked about, there is a breakout after this of how to advocate for your child in the public school system that's going to get more detailed on that as well. And so thank y'all for coming.